Hi, I'm Talissa.
And I'm Rachel, and this is Transatlantic Crime, a true crime podcast that covers stories from each side of the pond. Every week, we will both cover a separate story with a running theme.
Disclaimer, this podcast will contain swearing and details that some people may find offensive. If you are of a sensitive disposition, listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Transatlantic Crime.
So close.
Hi.
Hey.
It's Monday. We're recording a day late. Happy Monday. And
it's again a bank holiday Monday in England.
Is it? Oh, nice. So you have the day off.
Not at work. Yeah.
Wow. I thought you were skipping work for this.
No, God, no. I mean, I'd love to, but this is not going to happen.
Someday.
Yeah, maybe someday. So I basically went out. Well, I had a few drinks on Friday, and then I had I went out properly on Saturday. And then yesterday I slept for 15 hours straight.
Amazing. I'm so happy for you.
Like I am, but I'm also worried.
Why?
Doesn't seem right.
Your body needs it.
I know, but like I can't go out anymore because it just wipes out like the next 2 days.
Yeah, that's true. We're going to have to be really strategic in a couple of weeks when you're here because I feel like that too. And I don't want to be like wiped out and you want to be like, hey, let's go to the observatory. And I'll be like, okay.
No, you'll be digging my grave for me. So like, it's too expensive to repatriate you.
Yeah.
You're staying here.
We'll plan it out. I'm excited. But tell me about you had a great weekend, right? What did you do on Saturday night?
Well, it was really, really fun. But like the amount I paid for it, it just is we went to a drag night, which is really fun. But yeah. then we like went out afterwards and we like made friends with people who were also at the drag night. You know, when you just talk to strangers and like make mates with them and you're like, oh my God, like let's be friends forever. Like that kind of drunk.
Yeah.
And then got home and ate a pizza and was like, we were like drinking more and like dancing about. And then yesterday I was basically dead.
What were you drinking? Were you mixing?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's the thing that kills me is when I mix my drinks. If I stick with the same thing, then it's a little bit better. But if I'm mixing and I take shots and I'm all over the shop, then don't talk to me the next day.
It was rosé and then it was red wine and then I had some cider and then some more rosé. No.
Oh.
Yeah.
Poor what did you Talissa. Do? I did not have that much of an eventful weekend. I'm still like situating my place. So yeah, just getting things ready for you, making sure the apartment's nice.
Well, you
nice.
Were sensible.
But no, I'm saving my money and my energy for when you get here in a few weeks' time and for when it's my birthday as well.
Saving money and energy.
Yeah.
Like a little tortoise.
I am. That was my first tattoo, a turtle.
That's cute. Where is that? I don't know where that is. I've not seen that.
It's on my side, like side rib cage.
I have never seen this. Get it out now.
You want me to show
okay. Yeah. How have I not seen this? That's really cute. I've seen you. Did you like always wear a swimming costume around me or were you wearing like a bikini ever?
I don't know. I think the only time was when we were in Vegas and we were at that pool party thing.
Oh, I was really hungover then as well.
Yeah, we were all hungover.
We also had that time when we were in Palm Springs, but it was dark and we had the pool to ourselves.
Yeah.
And then there was another time that we were in a pool together when we were in Arizona, when we were in that like hot tub, but we were in a hot tub, so we weren't
random
really.
Random people.
Yeah. Oh, God. But yeah, cool. Cool tattoo.
All right. Yeah, we've all learned something today, I guess.
We really have.
So do you have any true crime news before I get into my story?
Yes. So I sometimes will flick through Now TV because it's like our equivalent of HBO. Mm-hmm. So, and they have a true crime section. So I found a random thing called, like, some of them you'll watch and you'll be like, eh, that's fine. And then other stuff you watch and you're like, how have I not fucking heard of this yet? So there was one called Murders at Starved Rock.
Oh.
Have you seen it?
I don't think so. Is it new?
Yeah, so the story ends in like 2021.
Okay.
So it's only just come up, but basically it's like really old, like not old, but like 2007, which kind of is old now. Of this guy, his dad was a prosecutor and his sister became a prosecutor and then he became a hairdresser. And his dad was like, this is not a career. But he was really good and he went to like London and Milan and all the fashion shows.
He was legit, a legit hairdresser.
Legit high fashion hairdresser. Yeah, but anyway,
okay.
He decides to become a documentary maker because obviously this is just the most talented family in the world who can do whatever they want. And he decides to look at a case that his dad prosecuted because he thinks the guy is innocent.
Oh.
And his dad is so fucked off. His dad is like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And so he made the... basically, it's three ladies got murdered in a place called Starved Rock and
Where's
they
that?
Blame a guy. Oh god, I want to say,
is it America,
like near Chicago?
Okay, so it's American. Okay.
Yeah it's near Chicago and it's like a canyon that they find them murdered in this canyon and they're all like posed and their heads have been like basically obliterated with some sort of blunt object.
Yeah.
But there's three of them and they charge this guy called Chester Weegar. Mm. And he's like, the guy is really skinny and there's three older ladies who are like, who weigh much more than him. And there's three of them. Like, how did he control three of them?
Right.
There's just loads of questions.
Yeah.
About the case. And it's really annoying because there's like loads of good alternative suspects and you have to kind of decide which one you think it is.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's amazing. And then I watched that, which is a three-parter. And then I found a podcast on it as well.
Mm.
So I am just so balls deep in that story right now. It's
What's
ridiculous.
What's the podcast called?
I think the podcast is just called Murders at Starved Rock as well.
Oh, okay. Because
it's his defense attorney. And when he was arrested, it was like 21 in 1960 something. When it's being shown now, he is old as fuck.
Aww.
And he's still saying, I didn't do it.
Is this a case of like racism, do you think?
Nope, they're all white.
Okay.
He's white, all the other suspects are white. But it is a bit corrupt in that the guy who owns the Starved Rock Park and the hotel that goes with it is a really powerful guy in town.
Ooh, all the way to the top.
So, yeah, it goes all the way to the top, basically. So, like, yeah, there's a bit of a conspiracy theory thing going on. Like, they didn't want to blame anybody that, like, actually had any connection with him because he was, like, a bigwig. And I truly recommend it. It's very good.
Yeah.
Although, in the 2007 parts, because the guy is a hairdresser, he's got the most ridiculous hair you've ever seen.
Is it like emo or like describe it?
100% nailed it. Done it. You've got it. It's side fringe sweepy.
Mm.
He's got like a little like a goatee. He's just like got a little bit of hair under his bottom lip. Like that's his facial hair. Yeah, and then in like the modern bits, he doesn't look like that at all. He looks completely decent. So it's just really funny. Like when you see, you're like, you can tell he was a hairdresser. He looks like fucking, what's he called? Charles Weller or like Vival Sassoon or whoever.
I always think about that. Like back in like 2007 or whatever, I was I was completely emo, but I didn't have the money to like maintain the look. So I'm kind of grateful for that because if I did, I would have gone all out. Like, that totally would have been me. I would have had very embarrassing pictures to look back on. But now they're just mildly.
I have got such an embarrassing picture that I found the other day that I will find for you and send to you. And if you're very... Do you know what? I might put it on the Patreon. Like, you're going to have to pay to look at that because it is fucked up how shit I look.
Yes. Okay. I'll try and find a picture of me too from 2007-ish time. Because that's like peak emo, me in university.
It's not good.
Yeah. No.
But then we'll look back in 20 years and say that about our hair, so it's fine.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to check that out. For me, what have I been watching? I've been so busy this week. I should say I'm very excited for the thing that I'm working on is true crime based. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, it comes out in July. I'm not going to say the title of it yet, but you could look it up. It's about Victoria's Secret and the owner of Victoria's Secret.
Oh, there's a podcast about that too, right? At the moment, somewhere, maybe?
Yeah, there's several podcasts that touch on it, but
yeah,
it doesn't go completely into it like we do. So yeah, I've just been so busy because we're finishing up on that, and then it'll mm-hmm. be on Hulu in July, hopefully, for our American listeners.
Such a big deal.
And I think for you, it'll be on Stars, maybe?
Okay, yeah, we got that, yeah.
Yeah. I don't have any podcast or TV recommendations because my work week has been very busy, but that is my future recommendation for people to watch.
Yeah. Self-plug. Yes. I've also been like rattling through books because I read before I go to bed, and I'm reading a book called The Secret Barrister.
Ooh.
And he used to have a Twitter. I don't know if it's there anymore. I tried to tag him, but it's basically about like his experience of the British courts. And I've learned okay. so much stuff. Like, for example, you know the hammer, like the gavel
mm-hmm.
thing? We don't have that in British courts. Like,
really?
Like, oh, you, sir, never... bang, may fuck off. We don't have that.
I guess I never thought about that. How do you end it? How do you put Bye? A full stop on it? See ya.
Just me. I think we have it in auction rooms, and that's the only place we have a gavel.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's just like explaining the difference between a barrister and a solicitor and a paralegal and like just all these complicated things I never knew.
Wow.
Which I feel like I might have to read it again because it is super complicated. Like, you yeah. know, everyone's like, I could be a lawyer. I don't know if I could anymore. There's yeah. a lot to learn.
There is so much and minute things that you have to learn and remember and catch yourself
and loads
on
of, like,
and
pomp and circumstance, and like you
yes.
have to wear this certain type of wig that's from a wig maker in
yeah
fucking Pontshire, like
yeah. That reminds me, I've been not really following the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case.
No, not me neither.
I don't want to comment on it either way because people are so passionate about it, but there was a part what you're talking about, like the pomp and circumstance about it, where like the mm-hmm. lawyer is asking a question and then whoever was on the stand starts talking and they say something like, well, so-and-so told me, and then the lawyer was like, objection, and the judge was like, you're the one who asked the question, and the lawyer was like,
because it's hearsay. Like, you can't answer yeah. with, like, gossip.
Yeah, but the lawyer was the one... The lawyer, like, objected himself, basically. Like, and they were talking about it. I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about it. And they said, the lawyer just said the wrong thing. Like, yes, he was trying to interrupt the person on the stand because they were doing hearsay, but they weren't supposed to say objection. They were supposed to say something else. And
yeah.
the judge just embarrassed him by not
God.
Correcting him. It's just stuff like that as a lawyer that you have to remember to say and do. And can I approach the stand? You can't approach the stand unless you ask. Like, here's
like,
some evidence. Here's some evidence. You have to like give all the evidence to the other person before you bring it in court. Like the other
oh,
side.
Oh, yeah, Brady. The Brady rule.
Yeah, so many rules, even before you get into court, that mm-hmm. you have to go through. It's just crazy. Maybe we should have a lawyer on sometime to talk about, a criminal lawyer.
Yeah, yeah, defo. Thing is, I think I probably know more about American law because you allowed TV cameras in there. Like, we don't see all of that. We just get it summarized for us.
yeah,
in a newspaper, but they're not going to go into the nitty-gritty of stuff like that. They right. just give you an overview, whereas like we can watch a whole trial
yeah
in an American court. So I feel like I probably know American law better.
We have a whole channel called Court TV, so it's just fucking court great. Cases. Anyways, I think we should get into my story this week because it's pretty extensive.
I'm so excited.
Okay. So last week, Talissa told a story about a cold case that was solved after mm-hmm. years. And I'm about to tell my American version.
Oh, I'm so tired. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this.
Amazing. Yes, relax. I'm not going to say the title, but I feel like you'll guess the title throughout the story or even in the first couple of sentences. All right, we're going to Kentucky. Do you know where Kentucky is?
I want to say above Florida.
I mean, everything is above Florida if you...
Was that like such a cheat answer to a question?
It is. I would say Kentucky is like kind of the South, but also kind of the Midwest. It's right below Indiana and it's right above Tennessee.
And above Texas, right? Like if I know Texas is really low, but I'm just saying like if I go like up in a straight line, am I hitting Kentucky anywhere?
No, you're not.
Fuck. Okay.
If you go to the very edge of Florida, like the top bit, and you go straight up,
yeah,
then you'll hit Kentucky in a few states.
Well, I need to do some geography research, obviously.
It can be very rural. The biggest city is Louisville. Mm-hmm. That's not the capital, though. The capital is...
Who the fuck knows that?
Frankfurt. Well, when we were in school, we had to learn the capitals of all 50 states.
It's so hard to remember 50 of anything.
Did you have to do any... Like, I'm sure you had to list the European countries or, like, name them or...
No.
No, you didn't have to do any of that kind of stuff?
Nobody knows what all the counties are called in England. No one knows that.
What was your geography in school? What did you have to learn?
So I remember actually quite vividly, we had to do a model of Japan because it's like really layered and mountainy.
Okay, yeah.
So we did that.
Mm-hmm. We did something
That's
like that.
That's pretty much
too.
All I remember, which I think just illustrates my knowledge of geography and how great it is. If it didn't involve art, I'm not going to remember it. If it didn't involve a glue stick, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. We had to do that too for America. We had to like build a little where the mountains were and the rivers and
diorama.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to Kentucky, kind of Midwest, kind of Southish.
Okay.
Also, I looked up the other day. We have a lot of listeners from Kentucky.
Wow, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kentuckians, I don't know what. If you are listening and anything I say in this episode is incorrect or whatever, please let us know.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to
And I'll get all that abuse because Rachel doesn't even touch the socials. So look forward to that.
You can email us. What's our email? Transatlantic.
I don't even know. It's transatlanticcrime@gmail.com.
Yes.
I will pass on the message.
Yeah. I look at our emails. Yeah. So we're going to a small town called Elizabethtown, which population back in 1987, when this story takes place, is around 18,000 people. It's south of the I-65 highway, and it's about an hour outside of Louisville, Kentucky's largest city. For history people, Elizabethtown is where President Lincoln grew up in his little log cabin.
That's so classic.
Yeah. So you'll find in this story that there's a lot of small towns. There's no city folk.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first few months of 1987. Vicky Heath is 41 years old. She's a mother of two grown children. She had recently gotten engaged and she was looking forward to the next chapter of her life. Her kids were growing up. She was about to get married.
Aww.
To make some extra money, she got a night job working at a motel, the Super 8 Motel, right off of I-65 Highway. On the evening of February 20th, 1987, it seemed like a regular night, when the motel manager checked in with Vicky before he left for the night around 11 p.m., the motel was half full. Does this story sound familiar yet?
No, not at all. And that's what I was thinking, which I'm glad of, because I'd like a surprise.
Okay, good. I was kind of worried that you would know it because there's been a few podcasts and you'll find out that it's been in the news very recently. So, yeah. So at 6:38 a.m. the next morning, February 21st, the Elizabethtown Police Department received a call from a worried guest at the Super 8 Motel. The caller said that they walked into the lobby to check out, and it was, in quotes, a complete mess, in total disarray. They couldn't find Vicky, who should have been checking them out that morning, or anyone else who worked there.
Free hotel.
Nah, I'm yeah, sure it's free night.
I'm sure it's a pay up front kind of place, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah,
does Super 8 mean, is that a brand, or does that mean like $8 a night? Like, what does it mean?
Oh, that's a good question about $8 a night. It might have used to have been that, but yeah. Motels generally, when they're off the highway, off the freeway, they're a cheap place to stay that for the night.
Yeah, what, for like a trucker or somebody driving really far and decide they can't do it anymore?
Yeah, truck drivers, people on road trips, traveling salesmen, whatever.
Mm.
Cheap motel, not like super nice or expensive or anything like that.
Yeah.
So a few minutes later, a patrol officer arrived and checked out the scene. According to him, items from the front desk were all over the floor. Lobby furniture had been overturned and the payphone had been ripped from the wall. Cash was taken from the drawer that was roughly pried open. Thinking that there had been a fight by a group of men, because that's what it looked like, the officer called backup. While he waited, he searched the property, walking up flights of stairs and down the halls, listening for any kind of loud or suspicious activity in any of the rooms. Obviously, he didn't hear anything. When he came back down to the ground floor towards the back of the motel where the parking lot and the dumpsters were, that's where he found Vicky's body.
No.
Yeah. Vicky Heath was found lying on her back in the muddy grass, dead from an apparent gunshot wound to her head. She was clothed in a sweater and skirt, but the clothes were ripped, mangled, and bloody. Next to her body was a set of muddy footprints that led away from her body and partway into the parking lot, where they abruptly ended and a fresh set of tire tracks started. Also, it had snowed that
night. Jeez.
So these were very clear. They were left pretty, like, normally if someone walks into a parking lot, you're not going to see their footprints. But luckily it snowed, so they matched up. Or they didn't match up, but they just showed up.
I always think as well, like, these people just, it kind of sounds like a random attack, because otherwise you would care enough to, like, scuff up your shoe prints or whatever. Yeah. Because shoe prints are quite, like, especially if you're wearing trainers or sneakers or whatever, could be quite identifiable. Or at least you could see the size of someone's foot.
Right. It could be very telling. Even tire tracks as well.
Yeah.
Like that guy in Canada, just, the pilot.
Oh my God, I think about him too much. Like, I was thinking about him today.
No.
Like, I was thinking Richard Williams? No, Russell Williams.
Yeah, Russell Williams.
I was thinking,
right.
In my head, I was thinking, how did they catch him in the end? And it was tire tracks.
It was. That was the main thing, because he had a very rare car. Or, like, not rare, but, like, not a lot of people owned or drove that in that town.
But then I think we consume an inhuman amount of true crime. Normal people don't. So they probably don't actually think about things like that. Whereas I would be like fucking changing my tires, like wearing clown shoes.
Yeah.
Gloves.
Clown shoes.
All that kind of stuff. Like, whereas, these people, they're just normal. Well, they're not normal because they kill people, but, you know, they don't think about, like, obvious things that would give you away, like tire tracks and shoe prints and stuff.
Well, and also, in so many cases, it's just men who think that they can get away with things because they've gotten away yeah. with things for so much of their life, and they're just brazen yeah. about it.
Yeah, they get to a point of, well, I didn't get caught all the other time, so what's the fucking difference now?
Yep. All right. So, local coroner William H. Lee Jr. examined Vicky's body for the autopsy. According to Lee, Vicky had been beaten, sodomized, and shot twice in the head with a .38 caliber handgun.
No.
A bullet from the crime scene had been recovered as well. Vicky's clothes were processed as evidence, and they discovered that it contained a substantial amount of DNA. Photos of the footprints and tire tracks were taken. Like I said, it had snowed, so they were pretty clear. So when this was in the news recently, the police said that at the time, police in 1987 were very diligent about collecting as much DNA as possible, and they said that that was pretty rare, and that the police back then were pretty forward-thinking in trying to collect as much DNA as possible. So that really helped.
Yeah.
This it didn't help for a long time, but it helped.
It's lucky.
Yeah. At the time, police believed that it was a robbery gone awry. Vicky's possessions she had with her at the motel had been taken, and also the cash drawer. However, the nature of the crime scene gave some investigators reason to believe that it was a crime of passion. For several years, investigators tried to follow up leads to solve the murder of Vicky Heath, but with barely anything to go by, they came up empty-handed. Also, I think about this a lot too for this case. If something happens at a motel, you have to investigate each and every person that stayed in the motel.
Which should be easy, right? Because you should have to, well, I guess you just sign in with a fake name. But
yeah.
And it's in the 80s, so everyone's paid in cash, so that makes it a bit more difficult. But
right.
So a lot of people might sign their real name, or you might have a lot of witnesses because everyone's like milling about.
Yeah. But if it's night, if it's like 2 a.m. in the morning, no one's around,
and people check out. Just,
yeah, especially in the 1980s, it would have been so difficult. People are staying in motels, these motels, because they're traveling. So they could be in the next state the next day. It'd be really hard to track them down as well.
You still do this in America, but we don't do it in England anymore, where you just sign your name, like, for a card. Back in the day, people used to sign, like, Mickey Mouse on their card all the fucking time, just for a laugh, or because people just stop checking the signature on the back of your card and the slip. We don't have sign stuff anymore. It's all chip and pin, or it's all, like, beep your card, like, contactless. Whereas, like, in America, you still sign stuff. I don't ever remember, even when I did work in a shop and people did sign stuff, I wasn't, like, inspecting their name against the card.
No. And even, same. Like, I've worked in grocery stores and restaurants and bars, and when someone signs their name,
you're like, whatever. As long as they get paid, like, just get out.
And you're not, even if you notice, like, oh, this looks different, like, what are you going to do? Your signature's different than on the card, pal.
You're not gonna be like, oh, I'm part of the fraud squad, by the way. Like, I don't give a fuck. Just move. So someone else sits there. Like,
what do you do? Call the police? Like, I don't know.
It's none of my business.
Right. Okay. So just saying how difficult it was, the police didn't really get anywhere with Vicky's murder. 2 years later, on March 3rd, 1989, in the small town of Merrillville, Indiana, a four-hour drive north of Elizabethtown on the I-65 highway, 24-year-old Peggy Gill was reported missing after she didn't call her manager that morning. Peggy, like Vicky, was a night clerk at the Days Inn Motel in Merrillville. And after her manager, Betty Pierce, did not hear from her at her usual 5 a.m. call time, Betty called the police. She said it was very unusual for Peggy to not call. Mm-hmm. Peggy was described as soft-spoken and shy, working the night shift to pay for business school. She was the youngest of four, and she lived with her parents. and she regularly competed in local baking contests. She just sounds like a really cute, sweet person.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
Although I'll tell you this, if I'm working a night shift anywhere, I'd be like, yeah, does the job come with a shotgun? Because if not, I don't want it.
I've worked many night shifts in offices.
Fuck
and
that.
Usually there's people around, though. And I've been lucky that there's an understanding now that if you're a girl and you're working the night shift, someone will kind of make sure that you're okay. Mm-hmm. Someone will be around to, like, walk you to your car or,
yeah,
you know, just keep you company or check in on you. So if you're a dude and you know a girl who's working a night shift, check in on her and make sure she's all right.
Oh my, yeah. I say that. I worked at a bar and I would come home really late on my own, so I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it, like, you know, like a hotel thing where you're sat in a building on your own.
Yeah.
Like,
and
that's
there's a bunch
of
strangers around.
Yeah, like you're open to the public, basically. Like that kind of
right
thing would freak me out.
Anyone can walk in. Yeah.
Yeah.
When police arrived at the motel, they did not find any signs of struggle, and Peggy's keys and purse were still behind the front desk. They didn't even contain the scene, believing that Peggy probably just fell asleep in an open room in the hotel, which was pretty normal for night shift workers, they said. Unfortunately, when the police searched a vacant section of the motel near the parking lot, Peggy's body was found. She was dead.
Oh.
She was naked, sexually assaulted, and had been shot in the head twice, this time by a .22 caliber gun. Her work uniform was neatly folded next to her body. Police officially contained the scene. Yeah, it is weird that he took the time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the first one, Vicky Heath's, it seemed like he was more in a rush.
Yeah.
So police finally contained the scene. They were, obviously, they didn't think that they had to before. So people were just walking around. So that didn't help.
Oh my God.
They took fingerprints from the front desk where they discovered that the cash drawer had been pried open and money was stolen. So there's another theme. Mm-hmm. A little over 2 hours later, the Indiana State Police were called by a school bus driver who was reporting seeing a nude body on their route near the small farm town of Remington, Indiana, which is about 50 minutes south of Merrillville, where Peggy's body was found. So 50 minutes away.
Whoa.
On the I-65. At that same time, the local sheriff's office in Remington were handling a missing persons report after an employee had gone missing from her night shift at the Remington Days Inn Motel.
Oh, shit. It's like four people now.
This is the third person. Yeah.
Okay.
So Vicky Heath was 2 years ago, and now we're coming to two people in one day. When police and the general manager of the Days Inn arrived at the motel, they discovered that the cash drawer had been pried open and cash was taken. Further, they discovered that the night clerk, 34-year-old Jeannie Gilbert, had left behind her belongings. She was also studying business. There's some weird similarities between the victims that I don't think anyone could really account for. But this Jeannie was studying business. So was Peggy. 34-year-old Jeannie, she also had two children, same as Vicky. They were both teenagers. They were growing up. But Jeannie had left behind her belongings. She was studying business and her books were found in the side office because she would do her homework at night, along with her purse and keys to the office. Jeannie was a mother of two teenagers. She was recently divorced and she had taken a second job to make ends meet. She wasn't supposed to work that night, but she had switched her shift because her daughter was cheerleading and she wanted to see her cheerlead.
Oh my God, this is just like nicest ladies in the world who work hard get murdered story.
Yeah, women minding their own business, living life, trying to get by, working nights. Probably
trying to better
the best
themselves.
Kind of women, because they're working nights, they're working hard. Everyone described each of them as hardworking and friendly and
oh.
Yeah, it's just shitty. So when police searched the area the bus driver had initially reported, they found Jeannie's body lying face down in a ditch. She was shot 3 times, once in the head and twice near her shoulder and chest. Her clothes have never been recovered. She was wearing socks and shoes, though. The autopsy reported that she, too, had been sexually assaulted before she was murdered. The gunshot wounds matched the .22 caliber gunshot that also shot Peggy.
Okay.
Jeannie's body also had scratches and scrapes that investigators believed were from her being dragged or pulled from a van or a trunk of a car. Her body also showed signs of struggle. Investigators believe that she was dragged from a car but put up a fight, grabbing anything that she could to stay in the car. So the difference between other two murders is that Jeannie was transported. She was taken from the motel,
yeah,
most likely alive, and then dragged out into the field. Remington was very like farm rural.
Yeah. And it seems like maybe that's why she's got a gun wound to her shoulder. Yeah. And was it shoulder and neck?
And her chest, and then, like around her, yeah, her breast area, yeah.
And then like one in her head, whereas like the other two were like two in the head. So yeah, maybe he was like trying to shoot her in the head, but she was like fighting.
Yeah. There was also a farmer in the area that heard several gunshots that morning.
But it's difficult in...
reported that.
Oh, well, it's good that he reported it. If you hear a gunshot here, you're like, what the fuck? But like, if you hear a gunshot in rural America, you'd be like, hunters or...
someone's
just
practicing.
People shooting guns.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to tell.
Or it's fireworks or, you know, you don't always want to think that it is gunshots, you know?
Yeah.
Also, I should mention the farmer who heard the gunshots, he also saw Jeannie's body and he called the police as well. So there was the bus driver and the farmer. With Indiana State Police investigating both murders, they found even more similarities. The bullets found from both Peggy's and Jeannie's murders came from the same handgun, and they eventually found a few weeks later that the DNA taken from both motels matched the same person murdered both women.
Oh shit.
A year later, in 1990, the same DNA from Jeannie and Peggy's murders matched the DNA taken from the murder of Vicky Heath. So now they know it's the same person.
Yeah.
That same year, in 1990, another night clerk, this time at a Days Inn motel in Columbus, Indiana, was attacked by a man during her shift. He sexually assaulted her and stabbed her, but she managed to escape. She immediately reported it to the police, who took DNA samples from her and a composite sketch. She described the man as having greasy hair, a beard, and a lazy green eye. So he I didn't know how to write that sentence. One lazy green eye. He had green eyes, but one of them was lazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you. It wasn't like he had Bowie eyes, like two different colors. Like they were both green.
He didn't just have one eye that was lazy and it was green.
She got attacked by a cyclops?
Yeah. Pretty easy to identify that man. Where is he?
Yeah.
The DNA matched the same profile as the three murders. So that woman who escaped, her DNA matched the three other murders.
So he's got a new MO, which is a knife.
Good comment, because I haven't mentioned this, but he did use a knife to subdue each of the people. Like, each person had injuries that indicated that there was a knife involved. So he would use a knife. And the woman who came forward and this next person who I'm about to talk about, I'll talk about in a second. So the DNA matched the same profile of the three murders. In 1991, a similar incident happened in Rochester, Minnesota, where a woman was attacked. She was able to escape again and give DNA and a description that corroborated the other linked cases. So this was now in Minnesota. Both women that escaped described the man as coming in, saying he was a truck driver, he was hungry, and so he was taking advantage of, you know, a woman's motherly, you know, wanting to help. They would come out and they would come from behind their desk or whatever, and then he would pull out his knife and threaten them and then subdue them. That's what both women described happening, and the DNA matched from that woman.
It seems like
well.
He's getting shitter at his job rather than better.
Yeah, they're escaping.
Yeah, most murderers get better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not worse. But then maybe he, I don't know, where his gun's gone. Maybe he's lost his gun.
Maybe he did lose his gun. Maybe he was, for some reason, weaker.
Yeah, true.
Maybe he was losing the will to murder. I don't know.
No. Yeah, because, like, letting people get away when they've seen you is a surefire way to get caught.
Yes, definitely. So police did their due diligence, gathering witness statements, tracking the killer's behavior and possible whereabouts during each murder. They had many theories, believing that there could have been two people involved, because especially with the two in one day, they thought that how could one person do that? There had to have been help. And they thought that for a long time, actually. However, with several locations to track across several counties, as well as investigating each and every person that stayed at each motel that night, and truck drivers, because these motels were usually across the street from or nearby truck stops, so police had to go there as well. The extensiveness of the case took a long time to get any kind of answers to the victims' loved ones. In fact, it took over 30 years. Over 30 years went by with barely any answers. From 1987, 1989, 1990, 1991, until this year.
Yes! My favorite! You are going down, motherfucker!
Yeah. And when I wanted to find a story, I looked for 2022 solved cold cases because I wanted something very recent. Yeah. So this year, Indiana State Police held a press conference on April 5th, 2022. So a month ago.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What did this stupid fucker do, Rachel, to get caught? I cannot wait.
They stated that authorities uploaded a crime scene DNA profile to several genetic genealogy databases to identify the possible I-65 killer's family members. So he's now
hunted him down.
The I-65 killer, because all of these were along the I-65.
Isn't there a few of those though? Like
there's
like the I-90 killer or the I.
Yeah, there's the I-70.
Too many to count.
There really are. I should get a list together because there's the California one. There's so many. Okay. So I-65 killer, that's what he's called. DNA tested by the Indiana State Police testing lab came back with a 99.999% positive match. The man's name was Harry Edward Greenwell.
Okay.
This is what was difficult about this, because I don't actually know why they didn't already have him matched, because I'm about to tell you who he is. Greenwell was known by authorities since the 1960s. He had an extensive criminal record, from armed robbery to domestic abuse to escaping jail, spanning every decade. He did things constantly in all of the Midwestern states, Minnesota, Iowa, Indiana, all over. And maybe that's why they couldn't match it up, because he did live in so many different places. That's the only thing that I can theorize, because none of the articles really stated why he wasn't already caught, with him being a regular criminal that police knew about.
I think the question to ask is, when was CODIS introduced?
Yeah.
Because CODIS is whenever you're arrested for something above a certain degree of severity, they take your DNA. So I know in England, it's maybe started in the 90s, our version of it.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because 60s, like 70s, 80s, he did
have
a lot of things. But I think from the 90s onward, he quietened
behaved himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas, well, yeah, I mean, here, even if you get caught drink driving, they take your DNA. Previous to, I think it was like 1987, maybe, it was the first case that we solved with DNA.
Yeah.
Maybe he just got arrested all those times and he just timed it right.
Probably, yeah. He got in there before any of that happened. Mm. He was a regular, extensive criminal record. His first wife died in a house fire in 1978. He married a second woman within a year, so wonder what happened there.
If you ask me.
In 1998, he was arrested when his stepdaughter attempted to stab him, and he was charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm. So that's just a very interesting tidbit that is not really relevant, but he had a 15-year-old stepdaughter that tried to stab him.
Oh yeah, I wonder why she's trying to stab him. Like, what's he done?
Yes. What did he do? Why did that happen? And he was arrested as well, which I think she got in trouble. She went to juvenile detention or something, maybe for a week or I don't know. But he also was arrested, even though he was the one that was supposedly the stabbed.
Victim. Yeah.
Greenwell worked for the Canadian Pacific Railroad for 30 years, enabling him to travel all around the Midwest. Unfortunately, Talissa, he died in 2013.
I knew that. I knew you were going to say that because you said his name was.
Yeah.
And I was like, he is dead, isn't he?
Yeah. Unfortunately, he died of lung cancer. He was survived by a third wife, Julie Jenkins, and their marriage lasted almost 20 years until he died. So my theory is that when he married her, that's when things stopped, potentially. Yeah. Because his obituary as well was like, he was a great guy. He was a friend. He was a straight talker. He was a hard worker. He worked for the Pacific Railroad for 30 years.
Oh, you don't know who you're sleeping next to.
No, we're about to get into that. So Julie Jenkins was called by the FBI earlier this year when they asked her about her husband. She was shocked, but she was just like, yeah, that's my husband. Here's his life. She just told them whatever. She didn't hear anything until the press conference a few months later. So,
oh, God, no!
Yeah. No! And it was her son, who lives in Minnesota, that called her and he was like, Mom, sit down. I gotta tell you something. There was a press conference today.
About dad or about a stepdad?
It wasn't his own child. It was,
oh God, thank
she
God.
Had children from a previous relationship, so it was her adult son that was like, Mom, sit down, I gotta show you something.
Remember Harry?
So she is quoted as saying she had no idea of Greenwell's past. She said to the Independent newspaper, I guess you think you know somebody. I thought I knew him, but apparently I didn't know him very well.
You don't know anyone. No one knows anyone. No. I might sound cynical, but they could be a murderer.
Yeah. And if you want to hear even more from her, the Independent online interviewed her.
Ooh.
And she just talks about how he was a nice guy. But then she kind of goes into, I think she's a little bit of a true crime person because she's like, well, if he did this, there's no question he probably did more than that. And, you know, she kind of like turns on him a little bit.
Fucking realist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So check it out if you want to Google the Independent Julie Jenkins.
Okay.
And she talks about how she spoke to the FBI and then found out a few months later. Officials at the press conference said that there was a distinct possibility that Greenwell was responsible for additional murders, rapes, and robberies in the Midwest, which are currently being investigated, which is great.
Good.
Douglas G. Carter, the superintendent of the Indiana State Police, said at the press conference that advances in DNA analysis and the dogged work of investigators... This is a really hard sentence to read.
Are you tired?
Read that again. Douglas G. Carter, the superintendent of the Indiana State Police, said at the press conference that the advances in DNA analysis and the dogged work of investigators should give other criminals pause. He said, "The message is, you might be able to hide for a while, but we're going to find you, even if you're not here."
Oh, I love that guy.
Me too. Oh,
if I was a cop, I would be that guy. I'd be like threatening dead criminals on air.
Yes, left and right. Where's your DNA, pal?
I'm like, hey, you over there in that grave, I'm coming after your ass.
I know you did it. Okay. This last little bit. Jeannie Gilbert's daughter, Kim Gilbert Wright, said at the press conference, "While this news might close the case at hand officially, new chapters of healing would begin for all of us involved, and those chapters will be written differently for each of us." And that is the story of the I-65 killer.
Well, I did not know that story at all. Did you think I would? Because I've said I've been down a bit of a cold case hole lately.
I just thought, like we were talking before, there's so many like I-70, I-65, yeah. I-90. There's
I want to say I-90 is the one that I know.
Yes. The I-5 killer, the I-5 bandit.
Oh my God, there's so many.
Yeah. There's, stop it. There's so many. So I just assumed that maybe you would know who the I-65 killer is. But that has been a cold case. They thought it was two people up until a month ago. So,
wow. Well, I'll tell you that there are so many cases being solved now, especially mm-hmm. since Michelle McNamara and Paul Holes. Like, yes. Oh, by the way, Paul Holes has got a book coming out soon.
Yes.
And it's like 25 quid. And I'm like, I don't even care. I would pay £100 for it. You deserve every penny of my money. But he's bringing a book out, and Michelle, you know, ever since Michelle McNamara and him kind of joined up to do the Golden State Killer and the genealogy DNA thing, if I feel like that's just getting better and better.
Yeah, if it weren't for Paul Holes saying in his podcast and everywhere he talks how important it is for you to do the genealogy and upload mm-hmm. your own genealogy, I probably wouldn't think it was that important. But the fact that he's saying it all the time, it really sticks with me. So it's definitely helpful.
Have you done it?
No, I haven't. But I know family members who have. So I'm kind of like,
they've
done it.
Me.
So
yeah. I did mine. And honestly, like when you look at GEDmatch, which is what they use, basically you get your DNA from ancestry.com or whatever, and they're like, here's your results in like a simple way that you can understand, like here's a little circle diagram with how much percent of what you are each like nationality or whatever,
right?
And then it says, and then here's like your DNA in like a fucking computer code, basically in like a little dot text file, and then that little dot text file is what you upload to GEDmatch. So it's not easy. What they do is really difficult. They are super talented people that are going through all this fucking data. And then they hone it down, I think, to one family tree. And then you can do it in like an easier, like...
Yes. Yeah.
Ancestry.com way, where you could be like, okay, so this is connected to so many family trees and stuff.
This is someone's second cousin. Maybe if we get a first cousin, then something even closer.
And obviously, you know, the type of age and the area maybe, and the sex of the person or gender of the person, and like they can even do like, this person will be between this height and this height, and they will either be like dark skinned or light skinned, and they might have like they might have blue eyes, like they'll know every, it's just fucking amazing.
Yeah,
and I think
really
it's just gonna get better and better. They're gonna go Minority Report on this shit, and I can't wait.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed my story this week. And
I loved it. You asking me or the audience?
Oh, everyone. You and everyone.
Yeah. Well, I liked it.
But yeah, next week, it's my turn first. So I'll be picking the theme.
Yes. I was thinking this because otherwise I always get to pick the theme, and that doesn't sound fair. So yes, you next week.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
All the best. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Transatlantic Crime this week. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at TransatCrimePod, Instagram at Transatlantic Crime, and on Facebook with Transatlantic Crime Podcast.
Thanks, bye.